Hi, this is Alan Chartok, and I'm delighted to be in conversation today with Dr. Lynn Porodnik about medical marijuana in New York State. Dr. Porodnik has over 20 years of experience working with patients educated at Sarah Lawrence College and the New York College of Medicine. She originally worked in obstetrics and gynecology, forming a private practice on the Upper East Side of Manhattan. In recent years, Dr. Porodnik made a major career transition to community-based medicine as a full-time medical marijuana practitioner. Education is central to Dr. Porodnik's work, and she gives numerous talks about medical marijuana in public and in private organizations, including engagements with Westchester County's Senior Alliance, Five Star Assisted Living in Yonkers, Cancer Services of Westchester, the breast cancer organization Soul Riders, as well as numerous Rotary Clubs and public libraries in New York State. We'll talk with Dr. Lynn Porodnik about all of this, as well as her forthcoming book and much more. But first, welcome, Lynn Porodnik.
Thank you for having me here.
Well, I'm delighted that you are with us. This is a very important subject. I can't tell you, I've got a bad back. And wherever I go, people say, have you tried marijuana yet, medical marijuana? Now, of course, I'm an old guy now. I grew up being a good boy. I never smoked marijuana. You're looking at me skeptically, but I never did, because I always thought I might want to be a congressman, and that would be the end of it. Now everybody admits, as soon as they come out and say they're running for president or anything else, that they did smoke marijuana.
But they didn't inhale if they're running for president.
No, they didn't inhale. So you've obviously got a position on medical marijuana, and let's start with that.
It's available, it's legal, and it's worth trying. There are many conditions that respond. I have been doing this for 3 years, and I've been able to really change people's lives, which for me is amazing. When I did obstetrics and gynecology, I often felt like any robot could do this. But with medical marijuana, I have the opportunity to get to know my patients, spend time, figure it out. And we've had some amazing results.
So give us an example of somebody whose life you've been able to turn around using medical marijuana, without using the name, of course.
Yeah. Yes, I have a 25-year-old young man who's on the spectrum who last year would walk into a supermarket, grab bags of food, consume everything. The family couldn't go to restaurants because he would grab things from every table he walked by, couldn't control any impulsivity. We've been working with the CBD primarily, and after 6 months...
And the CBG?
CBD, cannabidiol. Within the marijuana, they've identified over 100 active components. The two main ones are CBD and THC. That's what we work with in medical marijuana. The CBD is not psychoactive. It helps with mood modulation, anxiety, depression. It puts people in the middle of the road. The THC component is your classical pot. That's what's used for euphoria, increase appetite, feel well, and helps with pain. Back to Paul. So now he's 26 years old, and after 6 months on the CBD, he was able to move to a group home. And with my six-month follow-up, he wrote on his iPad, please tell people this really helps. This is a kid who's not supposed to have empathy or introspection, and he gets it.
So when you say he's on the spectrum, just so that everybody understands, you're talking about autism, right?
Yes, I am.
Is that common that these drugs or the derivatives from these drugs would help somebody with autism?
Autism is not a qualifying condition in New York, but many of these people have PTSD. They've been bullied, and they also have IBS. There's a very close correlation with bowel issues, requirements for gluten-free diets. So these people are able to qualify, and they've had some really nice results. The home where Paul lives, there are five kids, young adults, I should say. Three of them are working with CBD. So it's catching on, and I'm hoping that it becomes one of the qualifying conditions in New York.
Now, with you as a physician, what are you able to do as a doctor when you prescribe or when you meet with clients?
I sit down and I go through the patient's whole day. We start from the beginning, getting up, sleep issues, pain issues. When are they the worst? When are they better? And then I explain the program, how it works. We're able to put together a start plan. And I also work with titrating the medications with patients. It's not just...
Say that again.
I titrate the medication.
Titrate. What does that mean?
It means we start with the low dose and we work our way up. My job is to make people comfortable, not high.
Right. So there you are. The feds, of course, have a law against marijuana.
Yes.
And you, obviously, I mean, it's not that you're alone, but the entire medical community who works with marijuana risks arrest.
Absolutely. I risk having my bank account seized. I risk being arrested. I risk getting my license thrown away. But my kids are grown up. They've graduated college. For me, it's taking a stand on something I feel is important. In 2012, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. I remember really clearly looking up when getting radiated. There was this horrible fluorescent mural with palm trees and a beach. And I would have really liked to have a little joint, have a nicer experience, but it wasn't legal. I knew my kids had pot in the house, but I couldn't rummage through their stuff. I couldn't send them out to buy stuff for me, because what happens if they went to jail? Their life would be over. So that I kind of put on the back burner. Then this became legal in 2014, and in 2016, the dispensaries opened. So I took a simple...
Now we're talking medical marijuana now.
Yes, only medical.
Right.
That's what I do. I have to be compliant with New York State law, and I have to practice ethically.
Tell us a little about the New York State law. Now, I live in Massachusetts, where recreational marijuana is now legal. But in New York State, in order to qualify for medical marijuana, what do you have to do?
You have to have one of the qualifying conditions. These include several neurologic issues, irretractable seizures, ALS, Parkinson's disease, Huntington's chorea, cancer, PTSD, bowel issues such as Crohn's, IBS, and the list really goes on.
How about back issues?
Back issues are considered chronic pain. Chronic pain, by definition, is 13 weeks or more of pain. So that takes care of a lot of conditions, and that opened up medical marijuana for a lot of people who otherwise couldn't get their cards.
Now, obviously, there are always conditions which people find limiting. You as a physician, is there something you'd like to see done by the legislature that would help you even more?
Yes, I would like certain conditions opened up, such as anxiety and depression. I have several patients coming in on a lot of different meds, would really like to get rid of their big pharma pharmaceuticals. They don't like the side effects. They don't like getting up and feeling groggy. When they use marijuana that's not necessarily medical, they're feeling good. So they come in, they want to get the card, and they want to do it legally. Also, by going through the dispensary system, you're guaranteed no pesticide, no mold, and what's in it is what they promise.
You've just raised a very interesting issue, and I think it's been raised in New York City a lot, New York State a lot, which is there was a dispensing system. It was quite informal and quite illegal. There were people selling marijuana all the time. I'm not even going to ask you, although you could certainly answer if you want to, whether you as a young person or even a little younger, you look pretty young now, didn't imbibe yourself.
Oh, yeah. In 10th grade, geometry, Mr. Taus, I really didn't understand what he was talking about. But if I met a friend in front of the flagpole, had two little puffs, it was a great geometry day. The only problem was the Regents, and that was like the crunch.
Is it going to be the same problem?
The Regents? Well, to go high to my second Regents would have been bad, but it worked out fine. Got my 99 and quit pot. I realized it's a little bit more than I could handle.
Right. But the distribution by basically people who were breaking the law raised the issue of they're going to jail. And quite frequently they did, and quite frequently they were of color.
Yes. Well, that's a whole societal government issue. Now what they're trying to do is help people who've been convicted of marijuana issues. They're first in line to get hemp licenses. They're trying to get them involved with grow facilities and give them employment. And that's part of the legislation, and that's one of the factors in the recreational program. It was up for vote. It was not approved in New York. I think it will be approved eventually, but they're attempting to get it right. So I think we need to give them some credit for doing it correctly instead of just saying, hey, we're going to make it legal, and then pausing to say, how are we going to do this?
Now, Dr. Perodnik, you are a practitioner. You make money because people come to see you. I don't want to be crass about this. If they were to legalize marijuana and recreational marijuana, would that cut out your practice?
Not necessarily. I believe children, parents always want a doctor's assistance, help, explanation, help figuring out. Seniors want to sit down with the physician. They're terrified of this. I have a bunch of seniors who come in. I don't want to get high. I'm afraid of THC. So we start with CBD products. I gently work them up slowly, surely, steadily. And then they find suddenly, oh, they're using something a little stronger, but it's working.
So this becomes a medicine as opposed to a social experience.
Absolutely. And most patients end up doing this at home, the privacy of their own home, to feel better. They're not looking for a trip to Mars.
Well, I mean, you know, I have never smoked marijuana in my life. And, you know, now I got a bad back because I mentioned maybe I could do something like this.
Absolutely. In New York, there's no smoke. There's the vape pen, which is like e-cigarette. There's capsule and there's tincture.
What's the last one?
Tincture.
Tincture.
It's a concentrated oil that you put either under your tongue or in a dense food for absorption. And tincture is a way we can titrate, meaning we can go slowly and work our way up once a week.
So we've heard, of course, tincture, the word tincture of iodine, things of that kind.
It's a concentrate.
Yeah, concentrate.
And actually it comes in a dark amber bottle with a little dropper and also a syringe. So patients can draw up the syringe and figure out exactly what their lucky number is. And then usually we do Marvelous Monday. So on Mondays, we increase or decrease depending on results patients are getting.
People are listening to this right now and they're saying, hey, wait a second. Come on, Alan, ask her about whether this isn't dangerous, whether when you're driving a car, this doesn't go to your brain.
Actually, you cannot overdose on marijuana. You'd have to smoke 20,000 joints in 20 minutes, which
really?
Is physically impossible.
Well, I've seen people who have imbibed in marijuana who are quite clearly a little bit on the fringe.
Absolutely. You can get inebriated. However, you can't suppress respiratory function. And that's the issue with the opioids. Too much opioids, you can overdose and you can die. And actually, I've been successful in patients using methadone, putting in a little pot to reduce heroin cravings, and they do much better.
Okay, but nevertheless, you say you can basically what we would call getting drunk, couldn't you?
You could, but there's also, I have my patients set up their antidote bag using lemon products, black peppercorn, biting into it, pine nuts. They can come down. So
Well, what if they don't want to come down? I mean, that's the problem. They don't want to come down. They get in a car and they kill somebody.
Well, when I do my consult, I am very strict about no THC in driving. My parents were killed by a car. The driver was not inebriated, but they went to see the new Yankee Stadium and never came home. So for me, this driving business is really strict, and there's no place for driving when you're on THC.
Who says they're going to listen to you?
No guarantee.
Yeah. Look, you know, I'm all for this, but one of the problems that we should be discussing is there are people who are saying this is very dangerous. There are law enforcement people who are saying this is very dangerous, district attorneys who are saying this is very dangerous, and, you know, we can't just simply say, I tell them not to do it because we know they'll do it.
Well, the patient population I see is pretty compliant. I ask people to come back after 3 months for follow-up. I have them journal, and it's early. I've only been doing this for 3 years, but my patients seem to be compliant and respectful of the law. And part of the deal when doing this is I explain, you really can't go out driving with this. You may think you can drive fine, but you're really impaired. And that gets into other legal issues, such as being stopped at routine stops. If you have a card, you're supposed to be able to carry 30 days worth of product with you, and they do the field sobriety test.
Now, who gives you the card?
What happens is a patient comes to me or another practitioner, and they get certified. So they get a certificate and a piece of paper in which they can enroll online, and they get a card from New York State. When they go shopping, they need to bring their certificate and the card with them. So New York State issues the card.
So now somebody gets a card. How many people that you know, Lynn Porodnik, Dr. Porodnik, have basically tried to take advantage? Because in New York State, we don't have a legalization of marijuana as we do in my state, Massachusetts. We do have medical marijuana. Clearly, there will be somebody who thinks they can get over by getting medical marijuana.
Sure, but there's two ways to look at it. First of all, anybody can call, quote, their guy. And you can have pot in New York State within 10 minutes. Everybody know somebody where they can get it quick.
But not everybody like me would be willing to do that. But I mean, I was a good boy, and I wasn't about to court trouble with the law.
Well, you shouldn't do it because you don't know what's in it. And if, for example, I have some kids who they qualify for other issues, but their parents are really upset. They're out there, quote, scoring. They're buying products. They don't know what's in them.
I just recently read a story about fentanyl being added to some marijuana.
There's ketamine. There's all kinds of stuff that can be cut in, and that's when people get sick. So if they stick with the dispensary products, they know they're guaranteed to be clean and have what they contain. So the best shot on having a clean, healthy experience would be with medical-grade products.
So how expensive is it? I mean, there are some people who will say, you know, I can get a little bit for a little bit of money. Obviously, medical marijuana, this has got to be taxed, right?
It's not so much that it's taxed. It's very expensive to produce. In New York, they have what's called vertical integration.
Sure.
So the dispensary is responsible for growing, harvesting, processing, and transporting all within New York State. They're not allowed to have bank accounts. So you can only pay with cash and debit card.
Uh-huh.
They also have delivery, which is great for homebound patients. So it's set up that services available to people who are homebound. I also do house calls, which enables people who otherwise couldn't come to me to have their products.
Has this cut into the black market?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think it's really two different sets of people. Also, the black market isn't just poison. There's something called Rick Simpson oil, which is known to fight cancer. I'm not saying it's a cure, but people have had very nice results with it. It's a super concentrate of THC. Some manufacturers also use the CBD in there. It's not available at the dispensaries in New York. I have a patient with glioblastoma multiforme who was supposed to be dead 3 months ago, and her tumor base has shrunk. Are there any great studies about this? No. And that's one of the other areas in this country where we need help. They use pot that's grown in Mississippi that can be up to 4 years old to do human testing experiments, and it's not high-quality product. So there's a real disconnect between the medical marijuana as given in New York, the research available. It's really kind of messy.
We're talking with Dr. Lynn Porodnick. She's a physician, a doctor, about medical marijuana in New York State. This is a practice that she's been in for several years now. And Dr. Porodnick, when you go to the Rotary to give your talks and you see a bunch of people, you know, sort of tight around the collar, what kind of reception do you get?
Initially, they're kind of checking me out. They assume I'm going to show up in tie-dye and jeans and Birkenstocks and have a bag of granola and offer nuts and berries. Mm-hmm. But I speak okay. I can use words that command respect. And by the end of my talk, we're usually all laughing. And I've actually had people show up whose families are involved with dispensaries in other states, grow facilities, all kinds of stuff that I never would have thought. So by the time the lunch is over, I have some conversions, and some of these faces show up for consultations.
Let's go over the technical terms. I know you did it in the beginning one more time. All the products that are available, Dr. Porodnick, so that we can all understand exactly what they are. Go ahead.
Okay. In New York, they have capsules, which take an hour and change to kick in. They have tincture, which goes directly under the tongue or in a dense food. Under the tongue, within half an hour, you start having a response. In the food, about an hour and a half to 2 hours. And then there's the vape pen, which is like an e-cigarette, but the only thing in there is coconut oil as a carrier, and then the products as promised, the THC, CBD, and then there's some smaller players called terpenes, terpenoids, which affect mood, and these all work on the endocannabinoid system, which are receptors you have in your body.
Now, physicians are getting a lot of blame in this country for the opioid crisis. Would you compare what's happening with medical marijuana or marijuana with where we'll be turning around sooner or later and saying, we never should have gotten into this?
I disagree. The opioid crisis was caused by physicians getting greedy and Purdue Pharmaceutical, the Sackler family. They saw this as a way to reduce pain and They stated it was not addictive, and it is found to be addictive. They also got into detox medications, so they're able to get it at both ends, and people are annoyed. Museums are not accepting their money, and marijuana is very different than opioids. Opioids, patients get loopy, they get nauseous, they get constipated.
That doesn't happen with marijuana.
No, it doesn't. With marijuana, you can get sleepy, you can get dry mouth, dry eyes, but this will pass with time.
But sleepy while driving a car could be a real problem.
Well, that's with the THC. If patients are using the CBD dominant components, they're not going to be sleepy. They will not have psychoactive effects.
So let's go over those two. THC is?
THC is tetrahydrocannabinol, and it is the psychoactive component that we generally know and understand in marijuana.
And that is sellable through as a medical marijuana practice in New York State.
It's offered in dispensaries. I'm not allowed to touch products, so I can't...
What do you mean you can't touch products?
I'm not allowed to have any products. I'm not allowed to have a card. I'm not allowed to have any association with marijuana. I'm able to provide the education and explain to patients how this all works.
And to write prescriptions.
Yeah, well, it's a suggestion. It's a little different than a regular prescription. What I do is I make a suggestion of what ratios I think would be helpful, and if the pharmacist disagrees with me, we have a discussion, and we take it from there.
I'm sorry, Lynn, I'm getting lost now.
Okay.
You're not allowed to prescribe, you're allowed to suggest.
Correct.
Well, I can suggest to people, that's a difference, but I'm not a physician.
And you didn't take the course. The course, I had to complete a course and do their test modules, and that enables me to make suggestions of medical marijuana to patients. And I also have to keep a physician-patient relationship with my patients. So if you get your MD, I'll teach you how to do it and
no,
protect the course.
Too late for that now.
It's never too late.
Well, okay, so as a physician, I think you're open to certain accusations that you're doing it in order to make money. That's what you're doing. You criticize the opioid people, but that's what they were doing. We know that many of the doctors were doing that and overprescribing. How do we know you're not doing the same thing?
Well, you can check my taxes from when I did OBGYN to what I'm doing now.
You did better.
It's a different ball game. That's a surgical subspecialty, so my fees are much higher. I have patients with cancer who come to me. They can't quite afford it. I'm not going to say no.
I'm sorry.
Patients who really do not have the money to meet my fee.
I see. So you don't think,
I will do a sliding scale. If I have a patient who I'm taking care of who really can't afford the recertification fee the next year, we can talk about it.
Well, Lynn Brodnick, I don't want to be fresh in any way, but I have to say that I have interviewed a lot of doctors over the last 40 years, and they always say that. Well, you're very expensive, and they always say, I don't even want to tell you how many people I take care of and get a bag of apples for that.
Well, I get pie. I get a complimentary glass of wine at a restaurant where a waiter works. It's okay. I can have my regular practice. Then I can take care of other people. And my prices are not high.
Yeah.
I'm not charging New York City prices. I certify people for a full year. I don't make them come back every month because this is an out-of-pocket expense. So I like people to come back in 2 or 3 months, and then I have younger people.
So Medicare does not, or
no, because
Medicaid
it's federally
not,
illegal.
What'd you say? Because it's illegal.
It's illegal.
Program. Yeah. Very interesting. Very interesting indeed. We're talking to Dr. Lynn Parodnick. I could give that to you because I suppose you could find her online, P-A-R-O-D-N-E-C-K, Dr. Lynn Parodnick. Okay. So you're writing a book.
Yes, I am.
What's it about?
My journey. Being a pot doc, and the working title is Pot Doc, A Healer's Journey. It's basically the story how I got into this, patients I've seen, my medical experiences with this, which are very different than an OBGYN. I was only taking care of women. And probably my most profound patient was a 48-year-old male who was in the World Trade Center, got his team out from Lehman Brothers, and he asked me to come in while he was on hospice for lung cancer. And I ended up there 3 or 4 afternoons a week just talking with him, helping him move through this and accept the inevitable.
Lynn Parodnick, you were OBGYN. Obviously, you had people come to you and ask you about sex.
Absolutely.
And I remember distinctly, it was a long time ago, but I remember we had some people over for dinner. One of them said that they never, ever used drugs, but that they couldn't get it on unless they were using pot. And I was quite upset with that. I thought, you know, come on. So is that what you're finding, that people are less inhibited who use pot?
I would say pot allows for more freedom in the bedroom. My 27-year-old says pot really helps in the bedroom. He's not a patient, but him and his friends find it to be very acceptable and enhancing life experience.
Did you find that when you were back in OBGYN days, that people were talking about that?
No, people, when I was practicing, people did not talk about marijuana at all. It was considered an illegal substance, taboo. We didn't bring it up.
Right. Okay. So now, Andrew Cuomo, the legislature, I talk to Cuomo about this quite frequently. He says he wants it. He was opposed to marijuana when I first started talking to him because he said it was a gateway drug. This is something I've heard from practitioners and others over the years. Is it?
It is no longer considered a gateway drug.
But is it?
No, it is not. Because if you look at, many people do progress to harder drugs, but then you also get into psychiatric diagnoses and dual diagnosis. There is a subgroup of people who use these medications to self-medicate. So it gets even more complicated because legally this isn't available to people with anxiety and depression.
Shouldn't it be? It seems to me that it's logical it might be.
I believe it should be, and there are other conditions that I think it should be available as well.
So they are?
Spectrum disorder, all kinds of...
I can just imagine the telephone calls we're going to be getting after this interview is on the air from physicians who say, you're out of your mind, Alan. Yeah.
Well, it's available, and people find it helps. And there's so much stigma and so much skepticism. I have a 93-year-old former Marine who was in law enforcement busting people for pot. He didn't like the way opioids made him feel. He uses medical marijuana now for pain relief. And so for him, this has been a 180 to arrest people for this and now be using it himself.
The feds, and we have a president of the United States who certainly defies any kind of rational description in my mind. But what's the chances that they would say, instead of each state doing this, that they would come around and say, okay, it's here, we have to live with it?
It would make sense. The revenue from tax income is great. Look what it's done for Colorado, for infrastructure. Schools, highways have all improved. But with the current administration, it's not going to happen. The states now have the privilege of making it legal. That's the Kolb Memorandum that was under Obama. It was decided that this was up to the states to decide if they wanted it or didn't want it.
Can you talk to us a little bit, Lynn Brodnick, about the so-called card? In order to buy legal pot in Massachusetts, my state, you have to have a card, I understand. And it indicates that you are a Massachusetts resident. So I go by one of the 5 legal pot shops. We only have 1 in business right now, but we're going to have 5. And there is a huge line outside with New York license plates and Connecticut license plates on it. So obviously this business of what's going to happen and how you qualify, do they ask you for the card or your driver's license? Do you have any sense of that?
In Massachusetts?
Yes.
As a New York State resident, they do not accept your New York State card. So you're considered a recreational user, but you have to show identification
right. That
you are who you say you are.
Now, in New York, you get a card too, right?
Yes. What happens is patients come to a practitioner, they get the certificate, and then they go home and go online and register for the card. And they're able to print out a temporary card, which allows them to go shopping immediately, and the hard copy comes in about 7 business days.
Do you take much crap, you know, from people who write you troll letters or other people? I know I do here. The radio station, not about this, but about other things. Obviously, that's got to be a little uncomfortable if the answer is yes.
The answer is no. I would get kind of strange looks a couple of years ago. Now, I live in a small town, and I go to the same coffee shop in Katona every morning. And as I look around, I see more and more patients. People stop by the table. They say hi. They tell me a little bit, can I talk to you for 2 minutes? Sure. We walk outside. They tell me what they're using, how it's going, and you think I should up this, do this in the morning, and We have our little discussion, and then another patient walks by. So it's become really much more embraced in Northern Westchester than it was prior.
Is that where you were raised, in Northern Westchester?
I was raised actually in Yonkers.
In Yonkers?
Yes.
I know Yonkers well. There was always an experimental group of people in Yonkers. So I guess, what about your folks? Would they approve of this?
Yeah, my father would think it's fabulous. He was a little rogue.
Tell me about him.
He was a dentist, had a home office, believed in family.
Did he use laughing gas?
If patients requested it, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
He would say you're taking a space trip. Yeah. And he would actually have this funny astronaut helmet for people to wear to make it a joke. And for Halloween, he used to give out toothbrush and Trident chewing gum, and we were totally mortified. We wanted to give out Hershey bars, but he would not negotiate on this.
Yeah, Hershey bars have sugar in them.
Terrible C's, he would call it. Chocolate, Coca-Cola, all those bad things for your teeth that rot your teeth.
And how about your mom?
My mom was a teacher. She actually spent a lot of time home. There were three of us kids, and her job was to raise us. And then when she was older, she went back to school and became a business teacher in middle school and high school.
In Yonkers?
Actually, she taught in New York City. And she was a typing teacher. And I actually failed typing in junior high school.
I would have failed it, but I took orchestra class. And there are days I don't know. So you said something which certainly caught all of our ear earlier, that both of your parents were killed in an automobile accident.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
It was a July 4th weekend, and Monday was a holiday. They took a senior tour of the new Yankee Stadium. They were walking back to their car, and a livery car knocked them both over. My father died that day in the operating room, and my mother was in the ICU for 3 weeks.
And then died?
Yes.
And how old were you?
I was, give me 1 second, 53.
Oh, boy. Okay. And was this a sort of seminal incident in your life?
Absolutely. Probably the most horrific incident in my life. We had a trial after with the insurance company, but while this was ongoing, the question was what to do with the driver. The DA, they want to send him to jail, and I made the decision to have him do community service. I kind of sat back, what would my father want? This is a man who's married, had a 16-year-old, a 3-year-old, a 4-year-old. If he went to jail, what would it gain? His family wouldn't eat. They'd start with the food stamps and all that nonsense. Nobody would benefit. He'd learn more tricks of the trade. So I requested that he do community service.
Did he?
Yes, he did.
What did he do?
He worked in a nursing home for 3 months, taking care of sick, old Jewish people.
What did he do for a living, do you know?
He was a livery car driver.
He was a livery car driver. Is there any evidence of inebriation on his part?
No, but he kept turning around and talking to his passenger. The passenger had to remind him 3 times, turn around and face the road. And he turned around another time, and that was it.
What do you make of that?
He didn't understand the power of the car. He didn't understand he could kill somebody. He didn't intend to do it, but he did it, and the repercussions were horrible. I was really fortunate that the media didn't grab hold of this. It was called in as a very low-level ambulance call. If it was reported as what really happened, I would have had the Post coming to my house. I would have had local media, and that would have really made it dreadful.
So your parents paid for medical school?
Yes.
And by that time, you were a doctor?
Yeah. They were taken to Lincoln Hospital, and I had spent a lot of time there as a medical student. So when they came
in... I know it well, yeah.
But people recognized the name, and they knew I was related.
Yeah.
And that was a little creepy.
So you see, obviously you know where I'm going with this.
Yes.
You see the idea that, you know, we take our eyes off the steering wheel or the road for a minute and we play with all of these various things that we see in front of us, you know, electronic devices in the car. Or people get drunk all the time and drive all the time. And I'm not going to believe you fully yet, Lynn Brodnick, about the idea that if you're loopy from marijuana, you can't do grave damage.
You can. But the thing is, if you're using marijuana for pain, if you're using it to control a medical situation, you're not up for going hot rodding. You just want to feel comfortable. That's really the goal. And patients generally, they don't want to be out there. They just want to feel okay. So for them, feeling okay is being home, using their medication, trying to relax, not going out in the car.
Okay. I think we're on different pages on that one, but let's assume for a second that there's a different physician listening to this right now, and he or she believes that the way you help people with chronic pain is to give them, well, heroin or any substitution for heroin. Would you be more or less likely to buy that as a physician?
I do not like the opioids. I think, but there is, I feel there is a place for them. When people have cancer pain and it gets to be hospice care, if they need a fentanyl patch, give them the fentanyl patch. If they're not quite there yet, you can give them marijuana. The patient who I took care of, the man with the lung cancer, he was on morphine and was really miserable. That's why he asked me to come in, get him off, switch to marijuana. And there was a time when it was necessary for him to have the Dilaudid and the patches and face the end. But I do believe there is a role for opioids here.
Dr. Brodnick, are there other people who do exactly what you do?
Not really.
Because I'm wondering whether or not this becomes a subspecialty after a while.
For me, it has, because I know where to send people with. There's the dispensary system. Certain products end up being better for certain things. I have no vested interest. I make a recommendation. And I will also say my patients with what you have do well with these products. My patients are free to go anywhere they want, you know, any dispensary they want to purchase. And part of my job is to provide an education. So if they went to Massachusetts and wanted to buy some stuff, they would know what they're doing. I'm not saying that's the way to go, but it's a free country.
So what are the chapters in the book? Tell me a little bit more about how
the book is organized.
Okay,
the book. We start off with the general.
And the name of the book, again, is going to be. It's not yet.
Not yet. Working title, Patak, A Healer's Journey.
Okay.
So we get into a lot of stories of my background growing up, which really led me to do this.
So give us one.
I used to work at a halfway house for schizophrenic women when I was in college.
And where was that? Where was college?
Sarah Lawrence College.
Sarah Lawrence, of course.
But I would go to White Plains, and the girls were older than I were. They were all recently discharged from the hospital, and I was the boss. So it took a little bit of adjustment, but I learned a lot about mental illness, moving forward, and my power, what I could do. On the weekends, I would take the girls to the beach, to the movies, try to have them do things that, quote, regular people
and
did.
And who were these girls again?
They had all been at a Presbyterian hospital in White Plains and recently discharged with a diagnosis of schizophrenia.
I see.
And that was called Rutherford House. There's actually some old press about it, if you Google it.
Okay. So that's one chapter.
And then I have an article on psychiatric disorders. I have a long chapter on seniors and specific senior problems, such as Parkinson's and what this medication can do.
You said it helps Parkinson's?
Yes. The CBD component helps with the tremors, and the THC gives people a little euphoria. Depression is really pervasive in Parkinson's, and pain as well. The THC helps with pain. I have a woman who's in a skilled nursing facility, Kendall on Hudson, who, after her body got a little used to the marijuana, she had really bad burning pain in her feet. And then after she started getting a response, she would say, "My feet feel delicious. They don't hurt."
Have you ever seen an adverse reaction to somebody who is using one of these products?
I had a phone call last year from a gentleman who felt that he was allergic to the coconut and didn't know what to do. So I contact the dispensary, we all kind of talk about it, and decided that he would do better without the products.
That's fascinating. Do you have to carry insurance?
I'm not required to have malpractice because I am not prescribing or performing procedures. I'm making a suggestion.
Right. Now, when somebody gets a New York State card permitting them to use medical marijuana, you've made a suggestion they go and get it.
Yes.
But you haven't given them the authorization to get it in a letter or in something else?
The certificate has my signature on it, And this is what I am suggesting to help with their specific symptoms. I have to write the diagnosis and the issue that is the major one we're trying to tackle. But I would say very often it's not the disease that patients are complaining about. They're complaining about anxiety. They're complaining about insomnia.
Yeah, but there's somebody who's going to be the sister of, or the father of, or the cousin of, who's going to say, let's sue her. Because, you know, if she weren't there, she wouldn't have been doing this, and we want to hold her responsible. And you don't carry insurance.
Right. I'm taking a chance.
Mm-hmm. Are you married?
I am quasi-widowed. I am married to a man who's older than myself. He was exposed to Agent Orange in Vietnam and has Parkinson's disease. So he doesn't even recognize our son.
Wow. And how long have you been married?
31 years.
That's a long time.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And at what point did he fade from the consciousness of who you are or what you're, or your children?
He started fading about a decade ago.
Really?
And he had seen a neurologist, was originally diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And I had a patient who came in, and it turned out she was the step-granddaughter of a woman who was in the post. And there was a whole elder abuse scandal story, and the step-grandmother was a big philanthropist, and it was always Alzheimer's. I got an email the day after the consult. My step-grandmother actually had Parkinson's, as did her son. So for me, that was a game changer. I started reading about the neuropsych degeneration in Parkinson's and realized, you know what, carbidopa would help my husband. So we went to the neurologist, and he's open. He actually sends patients to me for medical marijuana. Using the carbidopa, my husband was able to ambulate.
And the word is carbidopa?
Well, carbidopa for Parkinson's.
Yes. And what is carbidopa?
It's dopamine. It's a levodopa-carbidopa combination. And for patients with Parkinson's, it allows them to move, which is pretty sweet when otherwise you're sitting in a couch all day.
Right. Well, there you are. Somebody comes in with the Parkinson's disease, been referred to you because of your knowledge of medical marijuana, and you're limited, right, as a physician on what you can do with them. You can say, let me suggest you try this. But you don't order them to try it, or you don't write it.
No, I don't. They come to me because they're interested. And I also, when people call and say they're not sure, I say, okay, we could do it one of two ways. If you want to come and I can give you the education and then you make your decision, or come to me when you're ready to do it. Because unless a patient's ready, it's not going to work. You have to follow specific times you need to take this, specific doses, and do it right. And I usually tell patients it can take 3 months to get to what we call their sweet spot. People are not used to the products. I don't want to be people falling down.
When your kids started to smoke pot,
uh-huh.
And you knew it was illegal, and you knew if they got caught with the stuff in their car and all the rest of it, they could get into trouble, did you counsel them?
Absolutely. First thing was, don't keep this stuff in your car. Second thing is, not in the house. I don't want my house to stink. Also, I would tell them moderation, and they also promise no driving when they're using this stuff. If I made it taboo, it would make it a lot more interesting. Fortunately for them, they liked it. They do it periodically. They've done fine.
But they're not addicted to it.
No, and they didn't get into other drugs either, and they're not into alcohol because I believe it was kind of, so what? We had a library with alcohol on the shelves. Bottles didn't disappear. I didn't have to put lines on things. It was there. They wanted a drink. God bless them. Because I really feel if it's all taboo, it's so much more exciting.
So, Lynn Peronick, if somebody's out there and they are listening to this interview and they've got substantial pain, they've had a couple operations, they've done this or that, what do you want to tell them?
I tell them if they're interested, it's worth a shot. Learn about it, read, and see somebody who can do a proper educational consultation and certification.
Will your book have steps in it that they should be considering when you say learn about it?
Yeah, there is an educational component because that's one of the things that's lacking in New York. You have dispensaries that are set up, you have physicians, but you don't really have outreach to teach people about this. That's why I go to libraries, I go to assisted living, explain what it's about. And that way people can learn and they have choices. I had a talk at Kendall on Hudson 2 years ago. This week, the maintenance man who sat in the back observing came with his mom.
Yeah.
And she's doing it.
Right. What about your plans? You're still a fairly young woman, but what do you do when you get older? How would you like to spend your years?
Well, I'm not giving up this.
Yeah,
I have a great time doing it. I have really nice patients. And for me, it's a pleasure to do. What am I going to do 10 years from now? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm starting to get corporate inquiry is what I want to work in a corporate space. I'm not about cement walls and being inside all day. I like my autonomy, but who knows? I really have no clue where this journey is going to take me.
Do people ask you for lifestyle advice other than about the marijuana products?
Absolutely. For example, Parkinson's.
Yeah.
There's a special gym. It's called Rock Steady, and it's a program based on boxing. Muhammad Ali is the god, and it's about movement. And it, for example, in Mount Kisco, they close the gym to the public, and 4 afternoons a week, it's just Parkinson's patients working out.
Now, Parkinson's is a disease you can have very little symptoms or a whole hell of a lot.
Exactly. It's really the movement disorder. There's the movement disorder part, and then there's also the neurodegeneration and changes in personality, thought processes. What happens is you get Lewy body dementias in the brain, which is Lewy body dementia. The Lewy bodies are accumulation of proteins.
I have a brother named Lewy, so I always worry about this.
Lewy.
So Lewy bodies what?
And these patients are very sensitive to all medications. So with them, it's really important to start with a very small dose because you can send them to Mars very easily with any of the medications they use. So it's really important for me to know which diseases respond and what changes happen with these diseases.
Well, two you've mentioned today, but Alzheimer's came into the discussion a little earlier. What would you say about, you know, medical marijuana and Alzheimer's?
Alzheimer's is not considered a qualifying condition.
Right.
But most people who have Alzheimer's have some kind of chronic pain, some kind of medical issue that can get them in. The medical marijuana has been found to be really helpful with seniors with dementia. In this case, we use a combination like 70% CBD, 30% THC. The strains that are out there are Harlequin, AC/DC. These are really nice, mild, slight euphoria, and patients respond well.
What other major diseases do you see?
That I see a bunch of MS.
Yeah. Is that right?
Yes.
MS is also movement issues?
Movement, muscle, pain, and these patients do well with medical marijuana. I also see a lot of women with fibromyalgia. These women...
Now, that's one of those diagnoses. Every time on my Medical Monday show, I have a doctor on. Somebody calls in, it's a call-in show, and says, fibromyalgia. There have been several times when the doctors who have been sitting across from me roll their eyes. What's that about?
Fibromyalgia, there's no magic test. It's really a bucket description for chronic pain with no identifying issues. It basically, back pain, it tends to run in women, and the marijuana is found to be effective.
So if it's psychiatric as opposed, because I think that's what the eye roll is all about, if it is a condition that is brought on by anxiety or whatever else, then you think that the marijuana products would be helpful?
They are. I have several patients that have found to be that it's effective for their treatment.
Mm-hmm. What else you got in your bag of patients?
Arthritis.
Arthritis. That's interesting, of course.
Absolutely. There's rheumatoid and osteo. Osteoarthritis, people respond well to the THC. The rheumatoid is an inflammatory-based one, so they do better with the CBD and some THC in there. Migraines, very popular for medical marijuana. The marijuana prevents rebound headaches, which for migraine sufferers is... The rebound is worse than the actual original headache. So in the bag of tricks, kids with cancer. I've unfortunately had to take care of a few of them, and that's tough to see a little kid who you know is not going to be here.
Well, obviously this stuff doesn't cure cancer, right? But what it can do is what?
Well, it depends who you talk to. On Facebook, there are all these groups that claim it cures. I'm not taking any stance. I will say some patients do well with the Rick Simpson oil, but I'm not calling it a cure. I'm saying it helps with symptoms, nausea, depression, anxiety. The pot really helps. Appetite, increase appetite, make people feel human again. The pot helps.
Wow. So let's look into your crystal ball in the future right now. We've already talked about how your practice might well be affected if they say anybody can buy marijuana in New York State. It might affect your practice, and you've talked about that eloquently. But we still don't know the full medical effects of medical marijuana, right?
No, we need research. We need quality research in this country. It's starting. There's studies being done with Montefiore Hospital in the Bronx in conjunction with Vireo Dispensary. This is in New York. So the trend is shifting, but it's not there. In Israel, that's where they're doing the most research and the most intense research and the most reliable research.
Are you afraid in the back of your mind, in the middle of the night, that they will find some things that are wrong with this?
No, I expect them to find some. Nothing is perfect in life. And this is something that can help people. But no matter what you do, there's always going to be give and take. And I expect them to find some long-term sequelae effects. We haven't really studied it. Pregnant patients, I'm like, nope, this isn't for you. Patients who are breastfeeding, nope, not for your kid.
And you say that because you know that there'll be negative effects or because it's just too risky?
It's too risky. Also, the human brain is still forming until we're 26. So I'm really, really cheap with THC in people under 26.
And one last question here. Obviously, there will be people like you and like me and like my friends who can afford this. There are a lot of people in this society who cannot.
It's true. And that's really something we all really need to work on. The prices need to drop down. There needs to be help paying for medication. Here you have these Vietnam vets who have PTSD. They've been smoking pot since they've been in Nam, and it's really the only thing that works for them. Yet the VA gives them a really hard time about this. It's not available through the VA. The VA won't even counsel them about it.
Well, we've had a wonderful time here today. We've been talking with Dr. Lynn Parodnik about medical marijuana. You can find out more at www.drlynnparodnik.com. I'm Alan Chartok. Lynn, thanks so much for spending all this time with us.
Oh, it's been a great time for me, too. Thank you.
You've been listening to Dr. Alan Chartok, President and CEO of WAMC Northeast Public Radio and Professor Emeritus at the University at Albany. For more information on WAMC's In Conversation with Alan series, or to order a physical copy, call 1-800-323-9262 or subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or on the Google Play Store.